We'd like to take a moment to talk about Jane, one of our sponsors who helped make this episode possible. Jane is a practice management software built for every kind of mental health practitioner and is thoughtfully designed with your clients in mind. Jane makes it convenient to meet with individuals, couples, or families, whether that's online, via Jane's telehealth options, or in person.
From day one, you can expect unlimited customer support through onboarding that sets you up for success and a 99.99% software reliability that ensures that Jane is always ready to start the day with you.
Just as you are always learning and improving, Jane is too. The team at Jane values customer feedback and uses it to design even more helpful features. So you can think of Jane as a software that grows with you.
If you're curious to see Jane in action, head to jane.app/mentalhealth/US to book a free one-on-one demo. You can also mention the code DCPOD at sign up for a 2-month free grace period on your new Jane account.
I'm really excited and slightly anxious to announce that my book, The Autistic Burnout Workbook, is releasing this next week. It comes out March 11th. It's available for pre-order right now. I am trying to avoid falling back into burnout. When you release a book, there is a lot of pressure to do promotion and to market and to get the word out there. So this is my burnout prevention form of marketing. I'm running a special right now for those who are supporting my work through pre-ordering. You can submit that information after you pre-order, and we will get you a coupon code that you can use toward our store for the same amount. So the workbook costs $18.99. So then you'd get $18.99 to use in our digital shop or in our Etsy shop, which would get you another digital workbook for free. So you buy one workbook and then you get a digital one for free. That is the promotion I'm running. It's technically a pre-order promotion, but I've been a bit behind on getting the word out. So for listeners of the podcast, I'm going to extend that. If you buy the book in the next month, you can go ahead and redeem the special. The link for that is in the notes below. Thank you so much for supporting my work. It means so much to me, and I just really appreciate you and hope that you will find this a helpful resource for you as you continue to build a life that is a bit more resilient to autistic burnout.
Hey, everyone. You are listening to the Divergent Conversations podcast. We are two neurodivergent mental health professionals in a neurotypical world. I'm Patrick Cassell.
And I'm Dr. Neff.
And during these episodes, we do talk about sensitive subjects, mental health, and there are some conversations that can certainly feel a bit overwhelming. So we do just want to use that disclosure and disclaimer before jumping in. And thanks for listening.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Divergent Conversations in a series that we are all
in. Are you trying to put our listeners to sleep?
I'm trying to think of what we just named the series, and my brain can't access it already. And we just talked about it like 30 seconds ago.
I know. So it's, oh, shoot. Now I left my brain. So it is. Freedom of it.
I literally just typed it out too.
You literally just typed it out. And I, oh my gosh, and the leaf blowers.
Okay. It is called Worn Out and Worthy. Hashtag not your neurotypical wellness.
See? There we go.
There it is.
Got it. You got it.
And that's okay. A great series title.
It is. It's like it addresses the issues we were having with the word wellness that came up in yesterday's conversation, which would be last week's podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think when we're conceptualizing what we envision as wellness from a very different lens, we were thinking about community and connection and how vital those mm-hmm. things are. To our well-being and our day-to-day and how important they are right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I feel that so deeply. I was even noticing, I don't know if you've noticed, but like, I've been on Instagram more.
You have.
And I like it, which is really interesting because I've had so much demand avoidance around social media. I've had so much resistance to it, but I'm finding myself, first of all, really enjoying some connections that I'm building there, but also just being a part of the conversation, feeling connected to others right now.
Yeah.
So there's a lot. So this will drop in like 3 or 4 weeks. We're in end of April right now. So just to set the stage, the like autism database inventory thing just dropped, and it's just been like a shit show of 2 weeks of Victor Perez was killed by police. There was RFK's statements. There was like fracturing in our community in response to that. Like, so it's a hot moment right now in the community.
Yeah, a really hot moment. And it feels like every day kind of creates more of that. Mm-hmm. And I know that I think community and connection are so vital, and how important it is during these types of time periods, because we're not in just like a moment. This is going to be a time period. Like, this is going to be prolonged. This is not something that will be shifting or changing next week or next month. Like, this is unfortunately a long haul situation. Mm-hmm. And I think right now we need community and connection and to feel like we are a part of something more than ever.
Yeah. Yeah. And we need to come together in a way that that is healing and not like furthering the wounds.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's really easy right now when people feel attacked, defensive, scared, rage filled, all justifiable, anxious, protective, for there to be wounding, especially when our defenses are up. You mentioned this in a previous episode. Not just attachment wounds, like actual wounds, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. These are like actual wounds, community-based wounds, ancestral trauma that's showing up and surfacing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's heavy. And I just want to name this too. Like, some of you have reached out. I shared this with Megan Anna earlier this morning, just like asking if we are okay and checking on our well-being.
My gosh.
And one, that means the world to us.
Yeah.
It's an interesting paradox. I don't know if that's the right word for what I'm about to say, but you and I have talked about this on air and off air about like, okay, if we're low support needs and we know that a lot of this information is really targeting moderate and high support needs, autistic people, especially trans, BIPOC, et cetera, we are a little more protected. But then having a following and being a public facing figure, there is some sort of target as well. And that it's a weird duality.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if I said that right, but I used that word a lot yesterday and it's still in my mind. Yeah.
I think duality is the right word. It is a weird duality. And it's also partly, so I reposted, I had posted this back in 2021, a story about my interaction with law enforcement and how it was so autistic, like it was because of my autistic and probably ADHD misses that got me in that situation. And it's my like whiteness that protected me. And anyways, I end the post with talking about like, I don't think this is actually a term that will ever take off, nor should it, but like high privileging autism.
Yeah.
And that like I have so many privileged identities that wrap around my autism that protect me.
Sure.
And how that is partly why, and you do too, that is partly why we can be public and visible and do the work we're doing, because we are more protected. But then in being visible in the work, there's then risk. And then I don't think we want to get into it in detail because we've talked about it, but then we both have family members that are more vulnerable.
Right.
Or have more vulnerable identities.
Yep.
And so like, that was also part of our pause of like, and my stuff of like, I don't know if I want to be perceived at all in this moment. So how is that like, okay. And then I do want to pivot to community, but like, how is the being perceived as we think about releasing season two? And I know you've been really hypervigilant and anxious. Like, how are you feeling about that?
It's a good question. And I want to like immediately respond because I want to sit with it for a second, see what's happening in my body when I think about it. Very therapeutic terminology.
I appreciate No, I appreciate that. We often need a moment.
Yeah. I don't know. It's so hard for me because you and I have talked offline about privilege and identity and experiences that I experience as like guilt of privilege a lot of the time, which I need to work through, obviously, continuously. But there are some identities that I do hold that offline that I'm that people wouldn't know unless I told them, and I'm not going to share them right now publicly for certain reasons.
Pretty obvious reason.
Yeah. I'm having major like ancestral trauma reaction to everything happening in our country, and that's a bit scary for me. And in addition to, I'm trying to think of how to word this in order to protect family members who also hold a more marginalized identity than I do.
Yeah.
And it's scary. I don't know. It's scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I feel like less fear by putting this into the world. And I also feel an immense amount of fear. It's so bizarre because on the outer layers, right? If we looked at like a wheel of privilege to some degree, it's like, you're a cishet white man. And if you didn't talk openly about being autistic, ADHD, and some other stuff, nobody would ever fucking know. And that's real. I think it's also scary when you're following and your reputation grows and it grows and it grows, because the reality is like your name is now in front of more people, right? So that is scary. I've talked to you about that with like my book deal. Scary. And then protecting certain like members of family, also horrifying because they can be collateral damage, you know, and I think that is a bit daunting as well.
Yeah. Yeah. My stomach just dropped. Yeah.
Maybe you need to come to Asheville and hit the rage room with me. Just saying. It's funny how we were going to talk about community and connection, and then the follow-up episode was going to be on...
Yeah, on consumption, but it feels like we're talking about consumption. Should we flip it?
Yeah, we're going to flip it. We're going to record both today anyway, so...
Yeah. I feel like the conversations will weave, because we're talking... Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're talking about community connection, but then consumption and how to do that in a way that's thoughtful and intentional and protective. And I think part of supportive consumption is this community thing of like, does it feel like we're in isolation doom scrolling,
right?
And feeling like where we're getting baked into more withdrawal, more isolation, more helplessness, or are we consuming in a way where we're tapped into connection, belonging, movement, agency, like people that see me and where it's like, okay, we've got this, or like, maybe not we've got this, but like we're in this together and there's things we can do to move on it.
Yeah. And I think for me over the last couple of months, I have shifted gears mentally from like being baked into it, doom scrolling a lot, feeling quite helpless and powerless in a lot of ways, maybe texting you earlier in the morning than you would prefer to start your day off with that type of content. And I have kind of shifted into like, okay, how can we tap into supportive content, cultivated content, curated content, advocacy movement, actual tangible steps of things that we can feel like we are doing? Because without those tangible steps, it is really easy to default your mindset into complete and utter despair.
Mm-hmm.
Even if these are little things that we can do on a daily or weekly basis.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Or to like, I think a lot about like reaction versus response.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is kind of interesting context now. You and I actually recorded an episode on this topic before, like a month or two ago. And then I asked, can we not release that? Cause like I was so dissociated during it. It felt to me like I was sending out half metabolized ideas into the world. And I was like, there's already so much reactivity and like activation that I didn't want to be putting that into the world.
For sure.
But so I think a lot about like reaction versus response. And how do we get out of like a reactive energy when that's what's taken over our bodies? And that's, again, I think that's where community helps. It helps us move from reaction to something different.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we can be like prisoners of the moment a lot, you know, when we are so active in social media or on news cycles, like to like absorb and metabolize something and immediately emotionally react to it publicly out of outrage, fear, despair, anger, anxiety, etc. And sometimes that can be really well-intentioned, but the message can feel really tone deaf. Or can really completely miss the mark. Or you could put yourself further at risk for reaction.
Or you're contributing to fear. And it's like, that's not to say we shouldn't be afraid.
Right.
But there are like some of the headlines and then the way they get circulated, it just becomes like a fear machine. And I'm like doing a ringer with my hand.
Yeah.
So actually, because I was thinking through this and I was thinking through it myself, but then also with my team around responding to Victor Perez's killing last week, a lot of people were talking about that because it happened 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And the word that came to my head was slow advocacy. I needed to metabolize it and think through how I wanted to show up and how to show up in a way that felt aligned with me and NDI. And like then when I did talk about it and when I have been creating content around it, it came from a much more metabolized place. Cause part of it was around the, like, what conversation am I contributing to here? How am I doing that? And I needed, and it's hard because people look at a platform that's big and it's like, why aren't you talking on this? But like, I needed a minute to metabolize and then to think through how to show up in that moment.
100%. I think that's a great way to manage that. And for those of you listening, maybe being able to do some of the same. One thing I realized in these moments, right? Like these very polarizing, volatile moments that continue to happen because we just live in a horrific, endless news cycle. Like it's not easy to find horrific things that are happening. And we talked a little bit about yesterday how our bodies and nervous systems were not designed to absorb that way. But I think in these moments, what I'm trying harder and harder to do is to sit back, absorb, not react immediately, because so often, like, especially those of us who have all of these privileges, especially white people, like content creators, can feel really performative if there's certain reactions right away in certain contexts. It can feel tone deaf. It can feel like you are centering. And, you know, I'm just trying to be so much more mindful of that, you know, in general. And it's interesting, like prior to Autism Acceptance Awareness Month, whatever the hell.
I just call it Autism Everything Month.
Autism Everything Month.
I need to trademark that.
You really do. Maybe we'll edit that out maybe so nobody else hears that and steals it. I'm just kidding. Going into Autism Everything Month, like that a lot. I had content that was already pre-planned, pre-created, you know, like autism acceptance, over awareness, and blah, 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 blah. It's all created a month long of content. So I don't have to deal with it every single day. But I am much more of a content creator in the moment where like pre-planning for me is fine for my social media manager, but it's not really my vibe. But I'm like, whatever, I'm paying this person to do it anyway. But the reality is stuff starts happening, right? And then your content goes out, but then it feels tone deaf because it's like I'm really missing the mark, right? Like we're not listening to all of the people who are saying like autism awareness for these reasons. And then it's like, yeah, no shit. Like that is the vibe right now. And that's really for me, having more cultivated content of really metabolizing, like you said, and actually putting my thoughts to things opposed to just like cookie cutter generic. Here's whatever. Because that's not me anyway.
Yeah. And okay. And then let's flip it. Let's flip it to the consumer. So like we're talking about, I think for both of us, we value showing up authentically. And that is part of it for me too, that like, is this performative for me to post? Because I know if I don't post, than like XYZ. And so for me, it's so important that I never post from a performative energy. Yeah. And it sounds like for you, it's like, yeah, you probably paid a lot for all that content to be created. And then you're like, nope.
Yeah.
So in how we show up, authenticity is really important to us. Okay, let's flip it to the consumer. Like, this is where, so I started doing this thing. So in the Nook last year, and we're going to do it again this year, we did a wellness sprint, like a spring cleansing. And one of the weeks was digital. We had like 6 weeks and we like cleansed different parts of our lives. And so what I did during that week, which was really interesting, is I just scrolled, and my sole purpose for going on was I'm going to scroll and I'm going to notice my nervous system's response to this content. And I'm just going to, that's the only lens I'm going to have. Not like, do I like it? Do I agree with it? But what is my nervous system's response?
Right.
And I noticed like content creators that I actually really like and respect, but like some of it was like, this just puts me in my fight flight. And like, I really appreciate this content, but I'm like, if I'm taking a nervous system cleanse approach, it's like, okay,
yeah.
Let me consider that. And not in a way of like, oh gosh, now the second voice in my head is like, but not in a way of let me block out the hard stuff in the world to not, like, that's a very privileged thing to be like, I'm just going to pay attention to the stuff that makes me happy. I don't mean it in that way.
Yeah, no, I don't think, I didn't take it that way. But I appreciate the clarification. And I think that's great. You know, I think one thing we were talking about as we're trying to figure out like episode ideas for this, and I'm going to butcher our title already, despite just saying it. So
worthy
and worn down.
Worthy Actually, and worn down.
Not your typical wellness.
Worn down and worthy.
One of the two. Yeah, we'll figure it out. It'll be on
we'll
this
figure it out by the end of the
accurately. One thing I was thinking about, you know, when we were talking, when I was mentioning like, oh, I'd love to talk about what travel has done for me in terms of all of this. And the thing I think I enjoyed the most about being in New Zealand, besides like the beauty and all the typical New Zealand things, because I was 18 hours ahead of everybody, it meant that I would wake up the following day from everyone else, which was real weird, at 9 a.m., would be about 3 p.m. Eastern time here the day before. So in a span of like 6 to 7 hours, most of the people I communicate the most with were going to bed. And it was only like noon or 2 o'clock in the afternoon there. So I was no longer checking my phone because I was like, oh, everyone is asleep. I don't have to worry about anyone or like be concerned about missing communication. And I don't have to look at my phone at all. And it was really awesome. I mean, that was so amazing for me.
So that's so interesting. So I'm just going to make some guesses to see about making the links explicitly. So you're not checking your phone as much because people are sleeping. Does that also mean you're then not getting pulled into like headlines and social media?
Yeah.
And you noticed, because we were chatting a lot while you were there, and you were, I mean, I know it was more than just being on social media less, but like you were a different version of you.
Yeah. It was like, I told you, I know you use this term a lot, like that free floating anxiety that I both experience a lot of. I felt like when I was there, there were days, if not several days in a row, where I didn't experience anxiety at all, where I was just like existing, and I wasn't.
Wow.
It was amazing, and I've never experienced that in my life.
Yeah, I was gonna say that it, like your baseline, I think of you as like 9 out of 10 hypervigilant, anxious, depressed. 10 out of 10 lately.
yeah it was just amazing. So like having that removal from that news, that 24-hour like news cycle, so to speak. Not that news isn't happening on that side of the world. It's just the time frame really helped me. And it was allowing me to just be a little bit more removed so that I could be a little bit more intentional in how I metabolized information.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love how you kind of backward engineered it to identify like the trigger. And I know there's like some controversial ideas around habits and neurodivergence. But I actually really like habits literature. Partly because it like breaks it down into like scientific. It's like,
yeah,
okay, what is the trigger for the thing that makes the action more or less likely to happen? It's logic, which I like that. So what I'm hearing, the trigger there was you checking phone to text with people. So when that is less, then that reduces social media use.
Yep.
So for folks who it's like, yeah, I do get pulled into this stuff and I don't want to, it's partly it's how do I minimize the trigger? I think of the triggers as, yeah, like portals. They're portals that like make an action more or less likely. So yeah, it would be maybe like having an hour away from the phone,
right,
or having like some rituals where access to phone is less.
Yeah. And I would even start with like, if an hour away feels like a lot, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, you know, like small chunks of time. I almost looked at it as like when I used to do a lot of addiction work to get through that, like that trigger or that impulse to act or that those flooding thoughts, to step away from it for 15 minutes at a time. And that felt almost impossible back in the day when I was in active addiction. But like now, if those thoughts came over me, I know 15 minutes, I got to get through this next like wave, you know, and almost looking at it as that wave that comes in really intensely, but then it dissipates, and then it comes in really intensely, and then it dissipates. But yeah, I would start that way. And I know for me, despite my best efforts of like putting my phone in the other room at night, starting around like 6 p.m., 7 p.m., I still wake up and the first thing I do is go get the phone and immediately go on it. And if you're starting your day that way, flooded by messaging and whatever, it's not the greatest way to start the day, in my opinion, at least for me. And it becomes a bit like obsessive in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about this too, and I've actually crept back into that. I started a practice a while ago that I actually want to, like, maybe as we're even doing this batch recording over the next 2 weeks, I'll do it to like experiment with it. But I started a practice of doing monotropic mornings, because what I realized I was doing was I would start my day checking my inbox, and then my like news cycles aside, it would pull me into like five different urgent directions, and my brain would splinter, which we know from autistic. Oh, this is a huge part of wellness. So like the autistic brain, monotropic style, we like deep singular focus. And then when we're forced into split focused activities, it can be really stressful for us. So I think a huge part of autistic wellness and probably ADHD wellness too is creating kind of monotropic friendly lives, but also creating space for monotropic.
Yep.
Anyways, what I was noticing is I would start my day with split attention, and then I'd get so overwhelmed, I'd like defensively go into monotropic mode. So I call this defensive monotropic mode, when it's like, I just need to find a project and go into deep focus and block out the world. But it was different because it was reactive. It wasn't proactive. So for a while, I was starting my mornings with journaling and writing and doing something very singular focused with my cup of coffee. And I'd actually like to revisit that and to start my day back with monotropic focus. Because what I noticed is that set the tone. So then when I did go to my inbox or whatnot, I was doing it from a place of more steadiness versus starting my day feeling fragmented and scattered.
Yeah, that's a great, great suggestion. I'm going to try to implement that, because what I do to offer the alternative is check your phone immediately.
That means, well, that's what I'm doing right now. So just to be clear, like that's the ideal, but that's what I've crept back into.
Sure. And okay, then like my issue for sometimes is not even to check it because I want to check it. It is because I want to clear it. My OCD really does not allow me to have messages or notifications. So like I want to clear it immediately. That's my goal when I look at my phone the next day. So I want to like delete all the emails that I can, get rid of them all. Look through all the Instagram messages and notifications, get rid of them all. Same for Voxer, same for Facebook, get rid of all of it. Then I feel like grounded in it. So like, I would love to start with more monotropic focus and being more mindful of it, and then kind of going into that place. I'll still want to clear it, but I would love to just do it without feeling like the fragmentation and the splintering that exists most days, because what that often leads to is then I turn the TV on. Then I am like scrolling. Then I'm not paying attention to anything. And like by the time I know it, it's like 11 a.m. and I'm like, oh, well, half my day is.
I've been feeling that in general with like ping pong. I call it ping pong tasks of like they are starting to take up so much of my day. And it's similar to you of, and then I'm like, what did I do with my day? It's like half my day. And I'll do, I used to do something similar too. I call it bucket B tasks, my ping pong tasks. And then I'll often put on a show because it feels so excruciating to be like, all I'm doing right now is ping pong tasks. So it's like, I need to be like, well, I'm watching a show and I'm doing this, which then makes it less efficient. Right. But this is how I'm using my walking treadmill lately, is because ping pong tasks, there is, and especially with the, with what we're talking about, with like the consumption we're talking about, there is a like arousal activation that comes with that. So I'm finding if I'm walking while I do it, it really helps. And then I'll like look down and be like, yeah, I just spent 90 minutes doing, I don't know what, but oh, cool. I walked like 5,000 steps.
Yeah. No, I like that. It sounds like a lot more intentionality and a lot more thoughtfulness about even the most mundane things that need to get done. So.
Well, this, but this is like wellness, right? Is like figuring out like, hey, what are the structures in my life that are in place, that aren't in place? How do I make this task a little bit more bearable?
Yeah. Sometimes like wellness for me, in terms of this, all the stuff we're talking about, is delegation. And delegation has been a huge saving grace for me to be like, hey, someone on my team, handing stuff off to them if I can. Because it just takes away that like pressure and feeling of urgency and that need to respond despite my demand avoidance that often shows up in terms of responding to anything.
That, yeah, that would be, especially as your account is getting bigger, like that would just be massively inconvenient. And I had that, and then I got so overwhelmed that then it was like, I'll respond to nothing. So I like flipped it.
One part of wellness with content, though, you've talked about this on here, and we've had discussions around strategies you've built in, and I really admire them, is that you have like automated messages for both your Instagram account and for your email. And I think we've even had some guests on the podcast like to follow your lead and implement that to you after. So I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that, but I think that's a great portion of this too.
Yeah. So, and that was like, that was part of that reaction to that kind of digital burnout, was putting those autoresponders up, and then partly just to release the expectation of like, I need to respond now. Like I probably shouldn't say this. And I'm actually going to be implementing some changes to my email, but I still actually respond to most email. All other things I don't really respond to, but just having the autoresponder, it like sets the frame for the interaction of like, hey, like here's some resources if you need them. Here's what to expect if you get a response. So that like was enough to lower my anxiety. So yeah, for people, and I feel like that's maybe a little bit like a step away from the digital consumption, but if for people who are just trying to develop healthier relationships to digital space, like thinking about digital boundaries, how accessible do you want to be? It's the neurotypical world is also really fast. Like I notice whenever a neurotypical emails me back and it's been 2 days, they're like, I'm so sorry for my slow response. And I'm like, yo, I don't say sorry for my slow response unless it's 3 weeks. So timeline are you working on?
Yeah, the differentiation and urgency levels and expectations are quite different. So and I notice if I find myself in that mindset of like, oh, I have to respond quickly. Oh, I have to, this is taking too long. Those are moments when I do need to like zoom out a little bit and slow down. Just kind of like check in with myself too, of like, it's the driving factor here.
Well, an email is harder for us, right? Because there's the like, I mean, we've talked about this. We're masking an email too, of like, okay, and then I warm this up. And actually, this would be an interesting, this would be good as part of the wellness series, but I don't know if I know enough. Like, it'd actually be interesting to do a whole conversation on email alone, because I know, especially for ADHDers, like, email can be so overwhelming. And there's new, like, I've taken like kind of a, like a just bear through approach. But I'm starting to realize, like, I am not accommodating my ADHD well at all. And I'm actually starting to look into, like, whether it's, you know, reader devices, or whether it's, like, speech to text devices, or whether it's, like, AI integrations that can help, like, make it less autistic sounding. Sure. There are, I think, accommodations we can build into our inbox that would support our wellness. Because I actually think email alone, it sounds weird, but like that's a huge stressor. Again, especially for ADHDers.
Huge stressor. I would like to respond to all of my emails the way I was jokingly reading that podcast ad. In like, if I'm being honest, like, you know, because that's one thing I just struggle so much with in email correspondence is like having it feel fake or disingenuous or really like high masking. And I just hate it so much. And I just want
to. Can you give us a sample of how you're going to read the Jane ad?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Let me get back into that really depressed place that I was in 30 minutes ago. So if you own a private practice and you've been maybe looking for some support and are just trying to make your life a little easier, Jane app for mental health practices is really great. And here's the link and check it out. They're going to listen to this and be like, why did we sponsor that?
Oh, that was amazing. But like, I actually would really appreciate, especially if it's a voice memo. It's like, hey, Megan Anna.
Hey, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Today. Okay.
Bringing in like fun and authenticity.
Yeah.
And Tima, I've actually started, it's probably not the most time effective, but like one thing I'm doing is all, so I use Tello, which, they're not sponsoring it, unlike Jane. Thank you, Jane. But Tella is a software that I use where it makes it so easy to screen record and just like record off the cuff. So I've started experimenting with like, I'll just record, like I'll be in my walking treadmill and I'll record responses versus email it. And I don't know if it's the novelty or if it's just that's easier processing for me. I think because of the dyslexia, I do have to like reread my emails quite a bit. And if, or just have huge disclaimers because like I'll have the wrong words in there. I'll have
words that you've made up potentially.
Definitely words that I've made up. And so that's one thing I'm trying is just like off the cuff videos.
Yeah.
But yeah, adding novelty. So you doing voice memos in your Eeyore voice would be a great way to infuse your digital practice with something kind of novel, and I would love to hear people's responses.
I sent you a voice memo yesterday, and your response in all caps was, Patrick, you sound depressed as fuck. And I was like, yeah, probably so.
Yeah, I was like, hey, it's so slow.
It's amazing though, like, it's amazing, you know, as we're talking about worthy and worn out, hashtag not your neurotypical wellness. This is wellness in a nutshell for me, right? Because when we started today, 35, 40 minutes ago, I was very low energy. And now because we're connecting, I'm like perking up a bit and I'll likely crash after this because I just don't have the energy reserves right now, but this is at least enjoyable, you know? And I think when we are really struggling, when we are really low and we are experiencing a lot of depression, can be just these little things. And it does not have to be like prolonged. It does not have to be an all day thing. It just can be an hour. It can be 10 minutes, but like these little things are super helpful.
I was literally just thinking about that because we've been laughing and we're like laughing at how depressed your voice is.
I have to, right? Like, it's such a cure in some ways. It's like releasing some dopamine to you.
Laughter is so connecting. I actually thought about that yesterday, too. Last week's episode on grief, you shared a story about Hazel and we're laughing about Hazel rolling in the like manure.
Yeah.
And when I think back to times I've laughed the most, it's actually been like the week after someone I loved has died. Yeah. And you're sharing stories of humor, and it's, there's something so deeply connecting about laughter and healing that, laughter's huge. And it's also like, and Yunetta, who we've had on here before, she made some lovely videos on this around joy. And I think like Black joy and Black laughter and how it's, you can laugh in moments like these. Like we can share dark memes. We can like, so if part of your feed on social media is like just funny stuff or dark humor, like, or if you're getting a reprieve from the news cycle through laughter and funny memes, like, please do that. Like that's part of resistance, is being able to hold on to your humanity in that way, being able to hold on to creativity and laughter.
Absolutely. 100%. It's like, it's so crucial to remind you that you are alive, that you are human, that you are allowed to experience other emotions, even when things feel really, really dark or really, really depressing. Dark humor is my jam.
It's my jam too. I actually literally just had this thought. When we release this, like, I'm sure we'll release reels. Every other one, can we release some like really random dark humor meme?
Yeah.
And like hashtag neurodivergent wellness.
Yes, please do that. Let's do that for sure. It's just so helpful. That's why I love that disappointing affirmations account and book that I have. And like, that's why when I went on my first date with Ariel, I asked her if she liked Cards Against Humanity. And I feel like if she was like, no, that really offends me. I mean, I don't know if we are married for 11 years. I don't have the answer to that, but it would be a challenge. I think so many therapists have such dark senses of humor too.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I think I don't want to generalize. A lot of helpers have really dark humor.
Yeah. It helps hold the heavy, I think. Yeah. It's actually interesting. I've been more tapped into my dark humor lately, and I realize it's something I mask. Like, if my therapist actually asked this a while ago of like, kind of, do you feel like you mask in professional settings? I'm like, no, I'm like embracing my awkwardness. It's like, and then I realized I do still mask a bit, like even, you know, not wanting to drop the F-bombs as much on here. And I do, cause I get emails when I do, and then I feel bad. Or just filtering out my dark humor, because it's like, oh, I don't know, but I feel more permission. I don't know if it's because of everything going on, or if it's just my more deepening unmasking. I feel more permission to like embrace the dark humor, I just think we need it right now. If that's your jam, then we're probably getting. Yeah, if it's not, that's cool too.
If it's not, you know.
Then go have some self-compassion exercises. Right. As
exactly. We talked about last week.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, and I'm being mindful of time for, I'm social ligamenting. I think meeting each other in Belize, I noticed a shift, and maybe it was just timing. Maybe it was just actually meeting each other and like realizing we don't hate each other after spending a prolonged period of time. I noticed an unmasking in you in that way too, because you kept referencing like your 13-year-old child parts of you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought you were talking about one of my kids.
And
I
was No.
Yeah, my 13. Yeah, I've got a 12-year-old boy. Got a 12-year-old boy.
Yeah, and I just thought it was really funny because you were really like, I don't know. It was silly. It felt very silly. Felt like a very like free energy. And I really enjoyed getting to experience that.
Yeah, I do have a really playful, silly side. And it's interesting. I've always been the opposite, where I lead with my serious side. It feels less vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And I have to really trust you for you to see my silly.
Right.
And then once I trust you, it's like, okay, I can pull out the 12-year-old boy. Like I don't know why it's a 12-year-old boy. It's just like, it's a 12-year-old ADHD boy energy. Yeah. Who like can be inappropriate and very playful.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
I enjoyed it
quite a bit. Okay.
Okay. So let's do some takeaways because we have diverged a bit. So, okay. Some other things. And also Brett, Audi ADHD boss, who I know I've been on his YouTube channel. You're going to be on it. He actually has a really good video on this, and maybe we can even link to that. Yep. I think where they talk about like maybe 5 or 6 steps, but some, if I was going to try to make a bullet list. So I think thinking about mindful engagement with social media, which includes like, how is my system responding to this? Is it like making me feel more connected? Like I've like empowered to like, yeah, this is happening and it's bad and I'm going to go do something. Or is it like pulling me into withdrawal and helpless collapse? So mindful consumption, like paying attention, time, thinking through time. The other thought I had when you were talking about like putting phone away for like 15 or an hour would be replacing that with something really pleasurable, especially if that's hard. Then I feel like the replacement activity would have to be really pleasurable to be able to help us get out of that kind of dependency a lot of us can form around our phones.
Yeah.
And then I think the third I would add is like thinking through whose voices you're letting into your head. Like when we consume stuff, we're letting that voice into our head. And especially if you're Audi ADHD, like voices can stick. And so thinking through, whose voice do I want this information through? I know like you sent me someone on Facebook who's like a historian, and I really like Heather.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I know.
Yeah.
I know, like for me, Pod Save America, they were like former Obama speechwriters, where I'm like, okay, I can take in this information once or twice a week through their voices. Cause like, and so figuring out the voices where you want this information received from, because that's also how it will live in our head. I don't know. So those are 3 bullet points that come to my mind. What would you add to that?
Circling back to like what we were talking about with Yunetta, finding joy and playfulness, even in spurts, tapping into humor, whether it be dark humor or less dark. I think those 2 things for me. And then I like your idea of just like starting the day differently. For me, I'm going to try that, because having more, you know, just mindful, monotropic, intentional time instead of immediately getting up and going to reach for my phone, and really want to be more intentional about how I use my energy, because I think that would be for me. I was just trying to use the tagline or the title we created, and I already forgot it again.
Not your neurotypical wellness.
I know that part. But what was the other part?
That you worn used? Out, worn out, and worthy.
Worn out and worthy. So if we are, quote unquote, worn out and worthy, our time and our energy reserves are so valuable and so limited. And I think it's just important to honor those things and be really intentional about how we use them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I love that word honor. Like, it's not about, oh, I've got to like do less of this or more of that. Or like, it's about like, you're a human living through a very hard cultural moment and you've got limited energy reserves. What does it look like to honor that?
Yeah, exactly. And if you are a private practice therapist,
go check out Jane.
Go check out the Jane app and use
it. It's kind of like a running joke. And so like, no, we actually are really thankful for Jane, because it is like one of our longest, most enduring sponsors. And one of the pivots we're making in our wellness is like, let's just not go after like 2 episode sponsors or like sponsors where afterwards we're like, wait, that didn't feel value aligned. So we're really prioritizing companies who are like, yes, we're going to we've got you. We've got you for like 15 episodes or a whole season. So like, let's make Jane a running joke.
Yes.
Give them some extra airtime in a good way of like, in a good way, where we are giving them some extra airtime because we really are deeply appreciative that they are supporting our work.
Here's one thing I will say about knowing us and talking about dark humor, talking about laughing at ourselves. The fact that we were actually like integrating this into conversation opposed to just playing the ad read that we've done actually probably means that we're more invested. And I know that probably from the outside looking in would be like completely unorthodox and counterintuitive, but here we are. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's also very us. And also because we feel like supported by them. So it's like,
for sure.
Yeah, you get to be our running joke that we've referenced many times throughout the 10-minute episode.
Exactly. So if you do like our episodes,
and you're a therapist, and you're check out Jane,
and use code DCPOD for 2 months off.
Oh, right. Use the code or else they don't know you came from us.
Right.
That's a problem.
That too. And those will be in the show notes. And if you are listening to us and watching us on YouTube or following us on Instagram, episodes are out on Fridays on all major platforms. And goodbye.
But wait, Patrick.
Oh, wait, there's more.
Can you just, for like sake of dark humor, can you just say what you said in like in your depressed voice?
Okay. Gotta get in the character again. If you're enjoying this content and you want to follow us, if it feels like it's worth your time and your energy, you can find us on all major platforms and YouTube. And if you want to, you can like and download and subscribe and share. All right. Goodbye.